Welcome to the Full of Money audio commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 5:10 on Irish summertime on June 1st. Today being Friday, it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes, but I'll start with the details of what's been happening over today and over the last week. And this has been the week in which the precious metals have turned the corner. We've had some significant gains over the last couple of days. Gold is up nearly $10 today, silver up 18, that's up to 1365 now, having been down below $13 earlier on this week. Palladium, good strong day as well, up over $4, and platinum up over $11, having been up over $22 yesterday. So turning the corner, found support really in an area where they needed to, and for all four of the main precious metals, they have maintained that progression of higher lows within the range that we've seen expanding since the highs that it made around this time last year. This has also been the week in which industrial metals have put in quite a good performance. Copper is up to 339, up only marginally, only 25 cents today, but has had a couple of very good days, and has a relatively similar chart pattern to some of the precious metals, so found some support around where it needed to and is moving upwards. But copper is certainly not the big story in the industrial metals sector. Lead is up 58 in here today. Considering that it was down around 2000 earlier on this week, it's at 2389 today, so breaking upwards from that type of consolidation. Over the last 4 years, we've seen industrial metals going each by turn. None of them have really gone up all together. All six of them together haven't really gone up in one go. But we have seen them take turns. Now, lead was the leader back in sort of 2003, 2004, and has largely been consolidating since then. It's now starting to accelerate out of what has been a rather mundane lateral trading range with a bit of an upward bias, really. But it is moving up quite aggressively now, and I'm not entirely sure what the reason for that is, but we can definitely see from the chart pattern that there is significant buying on in the lead market, and is definitely the leading industrial metal right now. Nickel is up 1500 points in here today. You'll see that there was really a rather long tail on that candle. I'm not at all sure whether that's accurate, but the high today it says is at 50,448. I think that's probably a bad tick, but we'll see over the next couple of days as Bloomberg correct their data, if indeed it needs to be corrected. This has also been the week where a number of the developed markets or stock markets of the world have started to push upwards in a more aggressive fashion. You had a key day reversal last week in on Wall Street, and that has not been followed through on. In fact, we've seen the S&P coming very close to its all-time high, and I'm not entirely sure whether it's actually surpassed it or not, but it's very, very close to its all-time high. There have been a number of stories about that in the media. And what we need to bear in mind is that I've also seen a number of stories saying how much cheaper it is now on a PE basis. And at Fuller Money, we believe that Wall Street is in a secular bear market. Now, exactly what does that mean? Because a number of people will say, gosh, how can you say that something is in a bear market when it's making new highs? Well, we define a bear market as a generational-long period of PE ratio contraction and rising dividend yields. And that is certainly the case on Wall Street, where you do have contracting PE ratios, where the price hasn't performed in line with the way earnings have been expanding. So PEs have actually been contracting and dividend yields have been rising. You can contrast the type of activity that we've seen on Wall Street with that in Japan. Japan, well, had an enormous bubble which burst in the late 80s and early 90s. And the bubble on the Nasdaq burst at the turn of this century. Now, there is a big difference in how the Fed has handled the fallout from that bubble versus how the Bank of Japan handled it in the early 90s. The Bank of Japan contracted liquidity to burst the bubble, and they continued to squeeze long after they'd actually burst it. And the result of that was they brought deflation into the market, and you had this water torture bear market on the Nikkei for the next decade and a bit. Now, the Nikkei bottomed in 2003 when the banks were recapitalized. But The Fed had been looking at this, and everybody was aware of just how the bubble had affected Japan. And there were a number of reports around 2002, 2003 about what the Fed was studying in regard to Japan. And they decided to go the other way. They cut interest rates aggressively once it was clear that the bubble had burst. And they flooded the market with liquidity because they were afraid of deflation. Now, deflation has been a fear among central bankers, not just since the turn or the bursting of the Nasdaq bubble. After the Asian financial crisis, they flooded the market with liquidity. Then you had the Russian debt default, and after that you had Y2K, you had the bursting of the Nasdaq bubble, 9/11, and all of these were deflationary factors. And central banks around the world combated that by aggressively pumping liquidity into the market. Now, there are three ways that we can three main ways that we look at liquidity. You have the price of money, which are interest rates, and they cut interest rates aggressively. There's the quantity of money, and M3 has been growing in excess of GDP growth, well in excess of GDP growth for much of the last decade. M3 in most countries at present is at something around 10 to 12%, but GDP growth in most countries is in the 2 to 4% bracket, or perhaps even lower in a number of countries. And that means that the quantity of money is expanding quite rapidly. Okay, and of course you have rules as to just how people can get their hands on money. So central banks have been, over the last couple of years, have been raising the price of money, but increasing the quantity of money. Regardless of the price of something, if the quantity is increasing, its value decreases. And they have sparked a new inflationary cycle. Now, central bankers are in the the business of managing inflationary expectations. So, when inflation becomes a serious worry for investors, they will have to be seen to do something about it. And over the last couple of years, we've seen interest rates rising. But inflationary pressures have been moderating, although the quantity of money continues to increase. And this has allowed central bankers to stay steady on rates, and although they remain vigilant, or at least they say they are vigilant of on inflation, it does allow them the opportunity, probably later on this year, to cut interest rates if they absolutely have to. I don't think that they are going to rush to do so. They will only do so if they have to. But going back to the contrast of Wall Street and Japan. Looking at the way Wall Street has been performing over the last couple of days, it's in a consistent uptrend. And looking at commonality, looking at markets across the world, we see a number of markets that are making new highs or challenging their 2000 highs. I think Germany is a very good example where it's coming right back towards those 2000 highs. And that is obviously extremely good news for any of the bulls out there. Of course, the main thing to be aware of is that when we're in a very nice bull market and it is becoming quite easy to make money, that is when we need to become less bullish, not more bullish. And a worry out there are rising interest rate, sorry, rising, excuse me, government bond yields. Today, treasuries are at 108.20, that's down 17 today. The 10-year is down 11 at 106.01. Gilts are down more than quarter of a point at 105.23, and the Bund is down 32 points. I talked about the JGBs yesterday because that was an important breakout yesterday, where it broke down from quite a long trading range. But JGBs, at least on the June contract, are 132.91 today. That's moving down to pretty significant low levels, and this is an important breakout. What we can see right across pretty much all of the government bond markets are that yields are rising. And rising yields are a headwind for equity markets. Now, equity markets are doing particularly well at the moment. And we are coming in towards those psychological levels of the 2000 highs. Now, I don't want to rain on anybody's parade, but it is particularly since we know that a number of markets have become overextended relative to their 200-day moving averages. It is a time to become more wary, as opposed to more bullish, because with rising government bond yields, that is definitely a headwind, and these government bond prices are quite weak. Together with the fact that equity markets are in a bull market, which is nearly, or well, over 4 years and counting. So this is something to be aware of. And while it's certainly not a time, I think, to close positions, it is certainly a time to be more wary and to raise stops. I personally am not adding money to the market now for a number of reasons. One is because I'm going on holiday a week tomorrow, but also because I'm very wary of the fact that I think that a number of these uptrends, while remaining consistent, are becoming a little bit overextended. And that is something to be aware of. Now, looking at equity markets around the world, those markets that are going to do the best over the very long term, well, we always say that, or we teach at the chart seminar that the biggest bull markets follow the biggest bear markets. And when you look at the long-term charts, and I would advise anyone to go to the chart library and just look at monthly charts, look at as much data as you can. Well, Japan is just finishing a bear market. 2003 marked the bottom, and it, while it's still still consolidating, it does appear to be, it looks much more positive right now. Korea has broken up. It's looking extremely positive, although had a big tail today, and that might cap it, at least in the short term, but it has broken out of a phenomenally long bear market. India had a generational long trading range, which it broke out of in 2003, and while it has gone up a lot, earnings growth there is quite remarkable. And over the very long term, with infrastructure growth and the introduction of a massive population as consumers into the global economy, the potential for India and indeed China to grow is really beyond imagination. So when we look at the potential of various markets and we try to cast ourselves as the judges in an international beauty contest, those markets which have the good fundamental story and which have completed long bear markets are more likely to be the ones that are moving into really big bull markets than the ones that have just finished very big bull markets. So I have my entire pension invested in Asia because I believe that Asia is going to be the market which is going to grow in terms of just about every equity market in that region. They're probably going to grow faster than any of the developed markets over the next 20 years. And I've put my money behind that. Looking at going back to the government bond sector, when you have these lower prices and you look at those long-term yield charts, all those long-term yield charts, they look like they're bottoming, or they look like they've bottomed. And while it's too early to say that they've broken up from those long-term bases, the chances of us seeing very much higher bond prices over the longer term are quite low. Yields are historically at very low levels, and we haven't seen yields as low as this in well over 30 years. That is an unsustainable position. There is a phenomenal supply of bonds in the market. And while there you hear lots of rationalizations about pension funds having to buy duration, about the various Asian central banks keeping reserves in long-dated government bonds, those are factors that can change. And with the amount of bonds that are out there, the supply is well in excess of rational demand, and it is only a matter of time before these start to move into a secular bear market for prices and a bull market for yields. And this will have massive knock-on effects. With the amount of liquidity that central banks have been pumping into the system, we are in a new inflationary cycle, which means that those asset classes that will do best are physical, because the price of money and the value of money is getting cheaper. Hard assets are going to hold their value over time, which means that gold has a very good chance of moving back up towards its highs in the near future and indeed surpassing them. While it remains in a range following the high that we saw last year, it continues to look like it's going to break out. And I'm personally very bullish of gold and the other precious metals for the very long term. Not least because there's less of them being mined, but also because we're in a new inflationary cycle and where physical assets should hold their value more than paper money. And I would tell anyone to look at the chart library again and look at those charts of gold in other currencies, because when we see gold starting to break out in a majority of currencies, that will be a good signal that we have completed the consolidation since the highs last year. Indeed, because of the enormous populations that we're seeing entering the global marketplace through globalization and the development of India and China and a number of other large population countries, physical commodities are in increasing demand. I suppose our biggest theme for the very long term is supply inelasticity meets rising demand, because the rising demand is pretty easy to understand. You've got an enormous number of people, or enormous number of very young populations, who need jobs, who need somewhere to live, who will want to set up families of their own, and will want. And I suppose that 6 billion people in the emerging world, they aspire to our standard of living in the West, and they're willing to work hard to get it. And it look there is all the signs that they're going to attain their goal, which means that there's going to be increasing competition for all types of physical commodities. And while precious metals are important, they are probably going to underperform the industrial metals because there is a limited supply of copper, zinc, tin, lead, aluminium, and all the other industrial commodities. And because these have also been in secular bear markets and have really only very recently broken upwards from them, we can say, well, we can pretty much be, well, we can be reasonably sure, I think is the best way of saying it, that these secular bull markets are going to last for not so much a number of years, but decades. I think it's quite amusing when I've done a number of TV interviews and I've said, well, my long-term view is, and people and the commentators have said, oh, you mean 2 to 5 years? 2 to 5 years, I would say, is the medium term, and long term, I tend to think more in decades. And with the increasing demand for industrial commodities, we can anticipate that that demand is going to carry on for a number of decades. What we need to think about in the West is when you have investment groups in emerging Asia starting to talk about building new cities and power plants and various different pieces of infrastructure, and attempting to secure as many resources as they can with a 10 to 20 year time frame. Well, if they are the consumers of these commodities and that's their time frame and that's their investment horizon, we should start thinking as investors along the same lines, because if we want to invest in this sector, we should be investing in those companies which will be supplying these countries and those companies for the next 10 to 20 years, which means that they will have pricing power and they will be able to increase their earnings at a rate well in excess of the technology companies, which were all the rage only 5 or 6 years ago. Now, because you have this enormous number of people entering the workplace and the global economy, and it puts an increasing pressure on commodities. Well, if you have rising commodity prices, sooner or later that does feed through into the inflation numbers. And given that central banks have already been increasing the supply of money, we are in a new inflationary cycle where government bond yields will rise. But it also means that the value of our paper money will be much less. Now, because of the competitive nature of globalization, you don't have really big trends it between the reserve currencies at present, because there is something like a competitive devaluation of currencies going on between the main currencies. When you look at the euro and the pound and the yen and the dollar, you have short to medium term trends which last for 6 or 7 months and then they chop around, and they've ranged much more than they've trended over the last 3 or 4 years. And that's because there's nobody wants a very strong currency. Now, there are a number of countries which at the moment are willing to tolerate a stronger currency, at least in the short term, but it's unlikely that they're going to want to to tolerate it in the long term. The Canadians, the Australians, and the New Zealanders have all got appreciating currencies. And the Canadians in particular, that is getting into historically high levels. While that is going to certainly damage anyone who's consolidating earnings in Canadian dollars, I mean exporters, the strong position that the currency is in is really quite historical. And while it is at this extreme level, we need to be very wary of any kind of bleating that we get from central bankers or politicians, because they will try to talk the currency down. The one very big move that we're seeing is the revaluation of the Chinese yuan or the renminbi, and that's because they devalued it so much in the 90s. So they're gradually allowing their currency to appreciate, and that is something that we can anticipate to continue for really the medium to longer term. I don't think they're going to be rushed into this, and it's going to be quite a glacial movement, but it is happening. And because a number of other Asian currencies have remained undervalued since the Asian financial crisis, and because they are competing with China, they're also allowing their currencies to appreciate slowly in line with the yuan and their competitiveness with China. And of these, Korea and Singapore have allowed their currencies to appreciate the most. And when you look at the Asian dollar index, which is a basket of 10 Asian currencies, it's the Korean won and the Singapore dollar approximate that long-term chart more than any of the others. Of course, many of the Asian currencies are in pegs. So when you look at the Singapore dollar and the Korean dollar, they tend to skew that chart a little bit more than the others. But with Singapore's aim to become the Switzerland of Asia, and the fact that they are using their currency to control the speed, the inflationary pressures in their economy, they've allowed their currency to strengthen. And given that Asia is the largest growth area over the coming decades, and given the fact that they're allowing their currencies to appreciate over the longer term, that makes investing in that region from an outsider's perspective all the more appetizing, because you get the currency appreciation as well as the equity appreciation. The only thing that I haven't talked about is energy. And energy, I suppose, falls into that industrial metals bull market, because it's feeding through into the demand coming from the emerging countries. But the big difference, of course, is that oil is not renewable. So once you've burnt it, it's gone. We're not going to run out of oil, but we're going to run out of cheap oil. We've been burning oil at an impressive rate for the last 100 years, more or less, and we've been pumping it out of Saudi Arabia for nearly 50 of those. And the Saudi Arabian oil is not bottomless. I have no idea how much oil they've got, and no one else does either. But we can be sure that sooner or later they're going to run out of it. The important fact here is that regardless of whether they run out of it or not, given the growth potential, or well, it's not even potential, it's a fact, the amount of growth that is going through from or coming through from emerging Asia and the other emerging countries of the world, we're going to be under pressure to make conventional oil sources pay for or to supply the demand coming through. Which means that alternative energy is something that is going to be looked at increasingly. Personally, I don't think that ethanol is going to be the answer, because purely because it's, I think, going to be impossible to create enough of ethanol to put into every car in the world, not a mind even a small percentage of the US market. However, when you look at technologies that are coming through and the enormous potential for growth in the oil shale sector. Oil shale has been something that's been on the cards for nearly 50 years, but the fact of the matter is that it has been difficult to get out of the ground and difficult to process. Well, with increasing advances in the technology front, I think that this may be something that will be looked at increasingly, and particularly because the US really has an awful lot of the stuff. And if they're very serious about cutting out their dependence on foreign oil, I would anticipate that that's one of the areas that they're going to be very keen on looking at. But with that thought, I will leave you to it. I apologize for recording the audio just that little bit earlier today, but I have been grappling with this audio for really most of the day with one of our IT people, and we have tried just about everything. And it appears that there is some sort of external static is interfering with the signal. But having found a window where I can record with a relatively clear static and just my own scratchy voice, I thought that I would take that opportunity and do it right now. But thank you very much for your time and patience over the last week. David is back on Monday, and have a great weekend.